This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau, and it's time to talk about income taxes with Mary Mellum of Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals. She and her husband, David, have been in the tax business for more than 30 years, serving individuals, consulting other tax professionals, and teaching tax seminars around the country. What questions do you have about filling your taxes out? Were you laid off or had a furlough last year? What would you like to know about how that affects your taxes? Well, join the conversation by calling 800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Jill. How are you today?
I'm doing great. It's so nice to have you on, and we've got lots of people who are, you know, they know it's tax time. It's starting to get real for them. One of the things that's new this year is the payroll chart. Why don't you explain what that is and how that affects our income taxes?
This is the Wisconsin payroll chart we're talking about, and the Wisconsin has lowered their income taxes this year. It is the third step in what's happened with a sales tax issue, a court case that came up a while ago, but which has resulted in our state income taxes being lowered, and this is step three. So it's the third bracket that has been lowered, and that has resulted in nicer refunds for some people this year. But the state has redone the payroll chart that they haven't redone for a number of years. And so next year, people should notice since the 1st of January that if their checks are the same amount all the time, they should notice that their check was a little bit bigger after the first of the year because the amount of state withholding went down. And that's the product of the revised payroll chart. Now, the important part about it is if you liked the refund that you got this year, next year's refund from Wisconsin will not be as generous because there won't be as much withholding paid in. So it's something to think about before next year. Either don't expect as much refund next year on the same income, or if you need to make an adjustment to your withholding, probably now's the time to do it sooner than later.
Okay, well, that makes a whole lot of sense. Thanks for letting us know about that. And let's jump right to the phones, Mary. We've got full lines right now, so we've got a lot of people who want to talk with you. Let's go to Jeff in Madison first. Hi, Jeff.
Yeah, thanks very much. I jumped the gun and filed early this year, which is unusual for me. I already got my federal tax refund. And then I found out just a couple of weeks ago that I received a distribution. I just got it on a the trust of a relative who passed away. They sold the assets at the end of 2021. There was a capital gain, I guess, which I don't even have the information yet. Can I report that in my next year's filing, or do I need to submit an amended filing for 2021?
Great question, Jeff. If the income is truly 2021 income, you have to amend the tax return to include it. It sounds to me like you were an heir of an estate or a trust, and you should receive a K-1. Take a look at the date on the top of the K-1. If it is a calendar year K-1, and that's what it would normally be from a trust, then you will have to amend to include those numbers. If it would happen to be an estate that has a fiscal year, it is the date that the year ends that tells you which year it belongs in.
Okay, great. Thanks for that question, Jeff. Let's go on to Dan in Caledonia. Hi, Dan.
Hey, hi. Thanks for taking my call. My situation is my parents bought land in Florida in 2007. It was in an irrevocable family trust. Are we there still here?
Yep, go right ahead.
Okay. And then, of course, the real estate market crashed. It was sat on until this last year. My father passed away in 2014. It became my mom's. She passed away in 2019. It was for sale on and off. We finally sold it in December of 2021. We made about a $15,000 profit. The property was bought for $225, was sold for $240, but now that profit was eaten up in realtor fees, title transfer, all of that. Do I have a now it's in a family trust's name. I'm the executor. Do I have any sort of a tax burden responsibility for the sale, for the profit, even though there really wasn't a profit? You know, where do I stand on this?
Well, Jeff, if this property is inside an irrevocable trust, the trust files a Form 1041, and yes, the trust has to report the transaction. Now, the nature of the property is important. If it was held by the trust as an investment and you really have a capital loss on it, the trust would have a capital loss that when the trust disperses or ends, that capital loss could be passed out to the heirs if the capital loss still exists at that point, if it hasn't been offset by capital gains on the way. But again, that's an irrevocable, and I'm believing that that's what you said this is. So yes, there is a filing requirement certainly for this. If this property was held as an investment, there is no problem with the capital loss. If the property was held as personal property that you were going to build a family building or something like that to be used by the family, then there is no loss allowed on the transaction, but it still should be reported because there's going to be a 1099-S issued in the amount of $225,000 theoretically.
Did that answer your questions, Dan?
Yes. So I guess, do I contact the IRS, or do I pick up a tax form and send it in myself? Because I don't see the IRS contacting me.
The IRS is not going to contact you, but if you have a trust that was set up as an irrevocable trust, that trust should have an ID number, and if it doesn't, you need to get an ID number for that trust and file a trust return.
Okay, great. Thank you, Dan. And let's go now to Vicki in Shatek. Hi, Vicki.
Hi. I filed my tax return, and when I reported what I received for stimulus checks, I reported $1,400 for as a third stimulus payment, $1,400 for my husband and myself. I forgot to report $1,400 for each child. I have three children. And the tax return is already filed. Will they catch that, or do I need to send an amended return?
Good question, Vicki. Your tax return will probably be held up because what you reported disagreed with what the IRS had. And if you did not report all three of the children, you might have gotten a refund of an additional $1,400 per child. So I don't know what you did on the tax return to reflect that, but if you claimed a refund that was in excess of what you should have, the IRS will catch it and they will contact you.
Okay, thank you, Vicki. And next we have Gloria in Milwaukee. Hi, Gloria.
Hi.
Go ahead. Yep, go ahead.
Yeah. So I have a question about paying estimated taxes. Say you determine, you're going to pay at least the amount of taxes that you paid the last year or 110%, and that's how you're doing the estimated taxes. But what if you get unexpected income, say in the middle of the year? Do you have to increase the amount of your estimated taxes going forward for that year?
The answer to that question, Gloria, is that to avoid the penalty on underpayment of taxes for the current year, you either must have paid 100% of last year's taxes, 110% if your income is a higher income level, or 90% of the current year's taxes. If you meet any of those conditions, you will not have a penalty when you owe the government money. So if you're basing it on last year's taxes, which is a good safe harbor, again, depending on whether you're under the 100% or the 110% rule, you do not have to increase it because you have unexpected income. You just know that you will have additional taxes to pay at that time.
Okay, thank you for that call, Gloria. And if you have a question for Mary, give us a call, 800-642-1234. Or you can send an email, and that's ideas@wpr.org. And we did get an email from Megan in Madison. She says, with a lot of folks switching to remote work full-time, what are the tax implications if you start a full-time remote job based in another state?
The remote job, if you are working remotely as an employee, there should be no tax implications to the other state because you're physically here in the state of Wisconsin and your income belongs to Wisconsin. Now, you might have employers that withhold the taxes for the state that the employer is in, and you might have to file a return to get that money back. But the tax where you're located is Wisconsin. That's where your income will be taxed regardless of where the company is.
Okay. Thanks.
Independent contractor, of course, again, then there are some write-offs that you might be able to take for that office and home, but for an office and home of an employee, there isn't, regardless of where you're working for.
Great. Well, thank you for that, Megan, and thank you, Mary. This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. Courtney Everett is our producer today, and Tyler Ditter is our technical director. We're talking about tax preparation with Mary Mellum. She and her husband, David, operate Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals and are enrolled agents. And we're going to go right back to the phone. And we've got Prairie in Lone Rock with a question. Hi, Prairie.
Hi, yeah, so my situation is that last year when I filed my taxes, I found I was eligible for earned income credit, and deducted that from my the total amount that I paid, that affected the amount that I paid. And then at the end of the last week of February, I received a letter from the IRS stating that I owed back taxes with, penalties and interest. And when I, studied the amounts that they had, it looked like they didn't state this in the letter, but the amount equaled what my earned income credit that I had found that I deserved was. And I kind of reviewed the forms, and I still believe that I am eligible for that earned income credit. I've tried calling the IRS daily about this, and their whole voice system is set up to make it very difficult to contest what they say you owe. And I'm kind of wondering what steps I should take. What should I be doing?
Okay, I didn't understand if you said you determined that you were eligible or you were not eligible. Which of those did you say?
Yeah, that I was eligible.
Okay. The note that you got from the IRS could be a CP-2000, but in any case, when you have a letter from the IRS that you disagree with, you have the right to contest their ruling, and that's what I would recommend that you do, is in writing prove to them, show the documents, go through the details of why you qualify for the earned income credit, and write to them in letters. It is going to take time because as hard as it is to get in on the telephone, they'd probably be telling you to put it in writing anyway. But They will get the letter and they will respond. It just will take time. And undoubtedly, it's going to take time for that letter you're writing to connect with the letters that are issued saying you owe money. So you're probably going to continue to get the letters saying you owe money after you have written to them, but you just have to be patient for it to be solved and you to get a conclusion on this.
Okay, thank you very much, Prairie. Appreciate that call. Next, we have Mary in Green Bay. Hi, Mary. What's your question?
My husband and I last year gifted, we sold some land, and we gifted our children each $30,000 from the sale of that land. We decided not to invest it ourselves. And I don't think we have to pay taxes on it, but my question is there a form we have to file with the IRS because we gave them that?
Okay. The question has a couple of parts to it. Number one, if you sold the land, the sale of the land is a taxable transaction on your personal return. And that's totally different from the gift. The gift of money is not a taxable transaction, but it is a reportable transaction, depending on how much you gave to each individual person. If in 2021, if you gifted someone more than $15,000 of value, then you are required to do a Form 709, and that's the form number. So if to each person there was a gift of more than $15,000, then that's the form. That form will not generate tax. However, it is borrowing from your unified credit that if when you die, you have accumulated at currently more than $12 million, you would have to pay estate tax, and the gifting part of it would be part of that.
Okay, thank you, Mary. Let's go to Nancy in Madison. Hi, Nancy, what's your question?
Yeah, I've been on disability for, I don't know, several years, and I was doing my taxes, and I would do them with the VITA volunteers, and they said, you know, you won't have to do taxes going forward because that's money you already earned, and I don't get W-2s or anything, so I don't know how I would file, but both of my parents died, and I just got three 1099 interest statements. You know, it's less than $1,000, but I don't know what that means as far as if I have to file something, even though I have actually no taxable income.
Okay. What kind of disability are you receiving? Is it Social Security disability, or is it disability paid by an insurance company?
No, Social Security.
Okay. If you're receiving Social Security disability, you should have gotten a 1099 SA from the Social Security Administration, if it is Social Security disability. That can cause a filing of a tax return if, with your other income, you are over the filing requirement. If you are getting SSI, which is a different federal program, you would not have a 1099 SA, and it wouldn't enter into that picture. But you have to look at the filing requirement. I'm going to assume it's Social Security disability for which there is a 1099. The requirement for a single person is that if you have taxable income of more or gross income of more than $12,550, generally you have to file a tax return. And if your interest statements plus the formula for determining taxable Social Security are underneath that number, there would be no filing required.
Okay, thank you very much, Nancy. Let's go to Jim in Green Bay. Hi, Jim.
Hello. We have a second home in Green Bay that's been in our names for a number of years that the mother-in-law was living in, not paying any rent. but we're going to be selling that home, and we've had it, let's say, for 10 years, so we understand there'll be a capital gain on that. But is there, can we claim a business loss of some kind because we can't deduct the taxes on it because of the standard deduction? We don't meet the max. We're under the max on the standard deduction. So is there anything we can do to get a further deduction on that house?
Jim, the answer to that is pretty simple. No.
No. I know that.
Yeah. It is a second home. Therefore, it's an asset. There is no exclusion for a second home. Use by your mother-in-law is considered use by you. So it's a personal asset sold at a gain that is a taxable gain. So the fact that your standard deduction is higher, preventing you from doing anything with the property taxes, does not give you any way to write that off.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, thank you, Jim. Let's go to Kristen Madison. I think she has another question about gifting money to adult children. Hi, Chris. Did we not answer something that you had?
Yeah, I just want to know if the children who are the adult children who are receiving the money, is there a tax implication for them?
No.
No.
There is gift tax generally has no tax consequences to, and the consequences would fall on the donor, not the recipient. They affect the donor's overall unified credit, if you will. So unless you are wealthy, wealthier than most, the gift tax is not going to affect you. It's cumulative that you have to remember it. You know, the gift tax returns are important to be filed when the gifts are over $15,000. And they're important to keep forever until you die because they affect your death or could affect it. And it depends on what the unified credit is at that point in time or the maximum estate that you can have without paying taxes.
Did I answer your question, Chris?
Yes. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. If you've got a question for Mary, you can give us a call, 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And let's go on to Carol in Janesville. Hi, Carol.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question on the standard deduction and what it covers. I usually, my income consists of just pension and Social Security, and to determine standard deduction, if I'm doing more than standard, would that be any contributions? And does that contribute, would it also include property tax, or is that separate?
Carol, that is a good question because that gives us an opportunity to talk about something else. What you're really asking me is, what's covered under itemized deductions? And that's the alternative to the standard deduction. Itemized deductions are medical expenses, including insurance, that exceed 7.5% of your adjusted gross income. Taxes, real estate, withholding taxes, estimated taxes. For some people, an alternative to the withholding taxes would be the sales tax. Property tax is included with that as well. Then mortgage interest, then charitable contributions. There are a few miscellaneous deductions, but they are more rare than they are common. So all of those things together have to exceed the standard deduction for it to be better to take the itemized deductions. However, for 2021, because of the COVID relief package, there is an ability to take $300 or $600 on a joint return of monetary charitable contributions in addition to the standard deduction. So thank you for asking that so that we could remind people of that.
Well, thank you, Carol. And we did get an email from Sandy, and she has a large medical out-of-pocket expense last year, and her HRA was depleted after about half of them were submitted. Is the total amount not covered by insurance considered toward the possible deduction, or only the amount not reimbursed through the HRA?
The medical deduction that could be claimed on the tax return is only the part of the medical that was paid out of pocket and not paid through some other source, not reimbursed by insurance or paid out of the HRA, because that's already received a tax benefit. So the one half that did not come out of the HRA that was not reimbursed by insurance is what you would be using.
Okay. And let's go back to the phone. Beverly in La Crosse. Hi, Beverly.
Hi. I have a question about selling a house and having used part of your home as a business deduction annually. Do I simply take the deduction for selling a house because it's the first one I've sold in 30 years, or do I have to file some extra papers with regard to all the deductions that I was able to have during the years that I use the house as a business location?
Okay. First of all, if you're selling your principal residence, it is eligible for the 121 exclusion. It's $250,000 up to $250,000 of gain for a single person, $500,000 of gain for an individual. You have to own and occupy it for more than 2 years, and two out of the last 5 years. All that being said, the office in home implication is that if you have taken depreciation on that property through the years, even if you're not using it for business in that current year, your basis in the property is reduced by the depreciation that you've taken, and that much of the gain will be taxable regardless of the exclusion. Or you cannot take that much of the exclusion so that it generates a gain equal to the amount of depreciation that you've taken over the years. So if cumulatively over the years you took $5,000 of depreciation, even though you meet all of the other tests, $5,000 of the gain will not be excludable and will be taxable through your Schedule D, and it's something we call unrecaptured 1250 gain. So it will have a special tax rate on the Schedule D form as well.
Okay. Thank you, Beverly. We got an email from Chris in Onalaska, and Chris's daughter is living and going to grad school in Des Moines, Iowa. Does she need to file federal or state taxes in either Wisconsin or Iowa? She made less than $5,000.
If she is, depends on, first of all, where she has made that money, as far as whether, where she might have to file a tax return. Generally, for federal purposes, the fact if all her total income is under $5,000, she has no federal tax filing requirements. She may have some benefits. This year, the earned income credit for individuals who are the proper age but have no children may give her an earned income credit that she may want to file if the situation fits. As far as the state, it depends on what state you're in or where you're a resident of. For instance, if she was working in Iowa but she's a Wisconsin resident, the Wisconsin residency would say that $5,000 is taxable to Wisconsin, and she may be required to file an Iowa return. If someone works in Wisconsin and is not a resident of Wisconsin, then Wisconsin level for filing a tax return as a non-resident is $2,000. So there's multiple things she has to look into because of that money and being out of the state.
So how do you determine where you have your residence?
The residency is where you live. Generally, it's where you live more than half the year. But when you're a student, you are tied to the place where you call home. And if you're temporarily away from that residence, then a student, for instance, may be considered a Wisconsin resident, even though they were in school for the full year in Iowa. So residency depends on kind of where your roots are. And generally, it's more than half the year, except if you meet a temporary, being gone temporarily.
Okay. Let's go to Neil in Minnesota. Hi, Neil. What's your question?
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I actually have two questions. I'm planning on retiring. I'm hoping on retiring in 4 years at 62. I have the option of drawing my Social Security. I also have a pension through my employer, and I've got a 401k that I would be able to draw on as needed. My question is, what is taxable? I don't know, Social Security, does that get taxed? Does my pension get taxed? I think I'm pretty sure when I draw my 401k, that would get taxed at that time based on my other income that I'm receiving at the time. And then the other question I have is, when it comes to deciding when to start drawing on Social Security, I know there's different thoughts out there. You know, is if I start drawing at 62, you know, I take a deduction or a reduction in that payment because it's an early retirement. You know, there's some different thoughts on that. You know, you draw on a smaller amount for a longer period of time versus, you know, waiting for that larger, you know, payment, I guess.
Okay, what do you think, Mary?
Well, first of all, let's take the first question as far as what's being taxed. Neil was exactly correct about the 401k. That will be taxable totally because you have not paid taxes on it when you earned it or the match from the employer. The pension fund is generally taxable, but if you were able to contribute some after-tax dollars to the pension, there may be some part of it that is not taxable. Social Security taxability depends. If all you have is Social Security, it's not taxable. If half of your Social Security plus your income exceeds certain levels, a different one for in single people than married joint, then the Social Security may be 50% of the Social Security may be taxable. And as your income increases up to 85% of your Social Security may have to be included in your income. So it all depends on how much your pension and 401k is, how much of your Social Security would be included in income. And, of course, other income that you might have, like investments. So that's the first question. The second question is harder to answer. It's not a tax question as such, and it depends a lot on your personality as such, and I can only tell you what I tell my clients. I say when it comes to drawing your Social Security, you've got to look at your history. If you are someone who has a family history of living to 100, drawing at 62 might not be a good idea because you are cutting back the ability, you are shaving the amount of dollars you have. Now, if you have enough other income and that's just part of the picture, that might not make any difference. But if you are one of the people that is a primary source of your income, I think it's something you need to watch out for. The other thing is, some people will say, my longevity is very short. I don't expect to live long because of family history or whatever. And if I don't draw it now, I'm missing out on those dollars. So it's really a question that I guess what I would suggest is you find out what kind of money from the Social Security records that you would be eligible for at different points in time, and think about your family history and your financial situation, and it is probably a good idea to talk that over with a financial advisor who would be aware of how much you have in your particular portfolio.
Okay, thank you very much for that question, Neil. Appreciate it. Let's go to Laura in Illinois. Hi, Laura.
Hi. So my question is, we live in Illinois. 7 years ago, we purchased a home for our daughter who went to off to college in Wisconsin. Her and her friends or roommates rented the home from us for the last 7 years, and we are now selling that house. So we know we have to pay the capital gains on the house once we sell it, but I'm wondering, because we live in Illinois, is there any kind of tax penalties in the state of Wisconsin that we would have to pay? So I know we have to pay the federal tax for the capital gains, but is there a Wisconsin tax we'd have to pay as well?
Good question, Laura, and the answer is yes. I'm assuming from what you said that the property is located in the state of Wisconsin. So when you sell that property, it is not only taxable to the federal, but it is also taxable to the state of Wisconsin. So you would file a non-resident Wisconsin return showing the sale of that property and paying any tax to Wisconsin that sale generated. On the other hand, you would also report that on your Illinois return, and assuming that Illinois is one of the states that gives a credit for taxes paid to another state, you would take that credit on the Illinois return for the amount of taxes that you pay to Wisconsin in the appropriate formula for that. That's how Wisconsin would treat someone who had a home in Illinois but was a Wisconsin resident. You would report an Illinois tax return as a non-resident, and Wisconsin would give you a credit for the taxes that you've paid there, thus not doubling up. So on your Illinois, you need to look to see, does Illinois have a credit for taxes paid to other states?
Is that generally true with most states, Mary?
I would say most states are that way, but you really have to check into each state because everybody has a little bit different rule.
Okay. Thank you, Laura. We're talking about tax issues on the show today with Mary Mellum, a Meshwabanon Tax Professionals. She's an enrolled agent. What questions do you have about your taxes? Give us a call, 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. On the show tomorrow, PJ Leash will be back with us to talk about insects, including those spongy moths and parachuting spiders. They're not as scary as they sound. That's tomorrow, starting at 11, right here on the Ideas Network. And right now, we are talking about taxes with our guest, Mary Mellum. And let's take an email. We received this from Patrick. He has income from Social Security and RMDs from his IRAs. He took all the RMDs in December. Can he have sufficient withholding taken at that time to cover his taxes, or must he make estimated payments throughout the year? That's for state and for federal.
The answer to Patrick's question is, as long as he has sufficient withholding taken from that payment, that is satisfactory. Withholding taken at any time during the year is considered timely paid during the whole year. So that, as long as he's got that, there's no need for estimated tax payments.
Okay. And just to remind people what RMDs are.
RMDs are required minimum distributions, which are required currently of people who are age 72 and older.
Okay, thank you for that question, Patrick. And we got one more from Eddie. He didn't get any of his stimulus checks, so he filed taxes last year with zero income and checked the box where it asked about them. Everything was accepted, but now he has to prove his identity. And how does he do that? He's extremely frustrated.
If he is having to prove his identity for federal purposes, because both the federal and the state could ask that question, he should have received a letter from the federal government, and the letter has a code on it. And in that letter, he should be instructed either to go online and answer the appropriate questions, and that code will signify who he is, or he can call the number that is included in that letter and answer the questions there. If he fails the test, it may require him to go to a local IRS office and bring his proof of identity there.
Okay, thank you, Eddie. And go back to the phone here. We've got Barbie in Washburn. Hi, Barbie. Oh, looks like we lost her along the way. Sorry about that, Barbie. Call back again if you can. Let's see. Mark in Chippewa Falls. Hi, Mark.
Hi. Wondering if we're going to have to pay taxes on the appreciation of our farm and home. We've just sold it after living here almost 60 years.
The home portion of it, I can say, if you've lived in it 60 years, you've met the 2 out of the last 5-year test. And the portion of the property that was used for your home is eligible for the 121 exclusion. The farm property depends. Normally, when you're in the farming business, there is part of the property that is considered your residence, and it contains some acreage probably around the house that is considered part of the personal residence. And then the other part, the farming part, is generally considered business. And the business portion of it would not be eligible for the exclusion. If you have retired, if you have converted some of it to personal, i.e. not the farm, that scope of what meets your house may be able to be expanded. It kind of depends on what you did with the farm after you weren't farming anymore, i.e. did you rent the land? Did you use it personally for snowmobile trails, or, you know, what happened to it? But certainly what is around your home that was your personal residence is eligible for the exclusion. The other is determined based on your particular situation.
In that case, I'm assuming Mark would really benefit from having a professional prepare his taxes this year?
I think you're exactly right that it would be a time to have someone take a look at it based on past experience and what's going on with the farm currently. That would be the best way to know what's taxable and what's excludable.
Okay, thanks, Mark, for that call. Next up is Scott in Sun Prairie. Hi, Scott.
Hi. I have a question about Roth IRA versus 401k. And the situation is this. My wife took out a 401k loan. She's got about $15,000 that she owes back, and she's considering changing jobs, which would mean that we'd have to pay it back right away. She also has a significant amount in a Roth IRA. And I'd always heard that, and I don't know if this is true or not, you have access to the contributions that you made on the Roth IRA before you retire, not, you know, the corporate part that they put in or the earnings that you may have had. But if she would have enough, if she changed jobs, that we could transfer $15,000 from the Roth over to the 401k.
Okay. Let me make sure I understand what you said, because you kind of cut out a little bit. I understand that your wife had a 401k program that she borrowed against. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So if she borrowed against her 401k and she leaves work, that 401k loan either has to be paid back in full or it turns into a distribution. And the
Correct.
Distribution, if she's under 55, that distribution is going to be taxable and subject to penalty. If
Okay.
you pay it back, there is none of prior to leaving work, there is none of that to be done. And in fact, you have the ability to do it, I believe, up to October 15th of that year, the year after you have left work. Special rules that you need to check into. But the other part of it is that the Roth IRA does allow you to take a distribution of the money that you have put into it, your basis in the Roth IRA, prior to retirement. As long as you don't invade the earnings, you can take that out and without penalty from the Roth IRA. So that would be one alternative of paying it back, would be taking
Okay, Roth IRA to the 401k. Great. That's what I thought. I heard that she did something different. So thank you so much for your help. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Scott. And we do have Barbie back. Hi, Barbie. What can we help you with?
Hi, my question was, my husband and I are both retired. My mother's house is being sold. She died a long time ago. And we kept the house and we rented it out. And now my brother wants to sell, and it's fine with me. I've wanted to sell for a long time. Anyway, it is going to sell, and we are going to make quite a profit. And I'm wondering, do we owe taxes on that money? I'm sure we do, but to who?
Okay. I'm assuming by your conversation, the property is owned by at least you and your brother and maybe more people. And so if the property is jointly owned and it is sold, then it is a reportable transaction. Your part of the sale, together with your part of the cost basis, is a reportable transaction. If it has been rented, it's the sale of business property. And it depends on whether it was a partnership or a trust that held the property, or whether you had your share of it that you've been reporting on your personal return. Whatever vehicle was used for reporting it, it is the sale of that property, and yes, it needs to be reported.
Okay, thank you, Barbie, for calling back. Let's go to Mary in Racine next.
Hello.
Hi, Mary.
Hi, I installed all new windows on my first floor, doing the second floor this year, but I don't know if there's an energy-saving credit that I've missed out on, or should I have claimed this?
There is an energy credit, a residential energy credit. Currently, this is the last year, being 2021 is the last year of that credit. The credit is a maximum $500 credit, lifetime credit, minus anything you would have taken in the past. Windows qualify if they are qualified energy efficient windows, and your dealer should be able to tell you whether those windows qualify. But those windows would qualify up to a $200 credit for it. But again, whether you are entitled to it depends on what has happened to you in the past.
Okay, thank you.
But certainly this year would be the year to do it. In 2022, as we know it now, there is no energy credit.
Okay, for the windows. Okay, Thank you, Mary, for that call. We're talking taxes with Mary Mellon of Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals. And you can join in, too, by calling 800-642-1234. Or you can send an email to ideas at WPR.org. And Mary, just before we go out on a news break, what's one thing that people really should remember when they're doing their taxes this year?
I think the stimulus payments probably are one thing that are important, to have the proper amount of stimulus that you report. Last year, we know that the IRS was inundated with returns, and at the beginning of this year, there were still 6 million returns from 2020 that were not processed. And a lot of that was improper reporting of stimulus, people claiming that they didn't get it for one reason or another, and that the government saw it differently and said, yes, we did give it to you. So that tied up returns, and this year that would tie up them as well.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Again, we're talking with Mary Mellum, a tax professional, and we'll be back with more from Mary and taking more of your questions right after this break for the news. We're talking about filing your income taxes on the show today. I'm Jill Nadeau. Thanks for being with us on the Ideas Network. Mary Mellum is back with us to discuss filing your 2021 tax returns. Mary's business is Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals. She and her husband David are enrolled agents and have been in the tax business for more than 30 years, serving individuals, consulting with tax professionals, and teaching tax seminars around the country. Join in with your questions by calling 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas at WPR.org. And let's go right back to those phones. We've got Nancy in Madison with a question. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. Yeah. So my parents have a house in New York, and I paid the property taxes. And I don't know, being a Wisconsin resident, what I'm supposed to do about paying property taxes in New York State.
First of all, is the house in your name?
Nancy?
Yeah, no, it's not in my name.
Then you paying the property taxes does nothing for your tax return. The property taxes, if you paid the property taxes for your parents, you've made a gift to your parents, or you're expecting your parents to repay you, and the deduction is for them to take.
Okay, thank you, Nancy. Let's go to Lee in Watertown. Hi, Lee, what can we help you with?
Well, I had a distribution from my IRA, and there was federal income tax withheld, but when I sent my taxes in, I forgot to include the form 1099-R. What do I do?
Okay. Let me understand all of this. You had an RMD and it had payroll it had withholding on it.
Correct.
And when you did your tax return, you omitted the income from that 1099-R as well as the withholding tax. Is that correct?
No, the income was reported and the federal withholding was reported, but I didn't send in the 1099 form.
Okay, and did you paper file your return?
Yes.
Okay. It's required to go in, but the only thing that you could do is send an amended return and send the copy of the form with it. I'm not sure that the IRS could, when they receive your return and process it, they could send you a letter back asking for a copy of it. It depends on what their process is right now, because they do have a copy of it. they get an electronic copy of it from the sender of the issuer of the 1099. So if I were in your case, I'd probably just wait and see what happens, because in all likelihood, if you sent in an amended return with no change but just attached to that return, it's hard to know how long it would take for the two to match up. So I think I would just let it go for now and wait for the IRS to ask for information if they feel that they need it.
Okay, thank you, Lee. Next up is Janice in Chaseburg. Hi, Janice. What can we help you with?
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, if I gift a house, which is more than $30,000 that I'm allowed to gift, to my daughter who's renting it, how does that affect my taxes and the gift tax?
Okay. First of all, for a $30,000 gift to be allowed to your daughter, you would have to be giving it to your daughter and someone else. For 2021, the gift tax exclusion is $15,000. It does increase to $16,000 in 2022, but $30,000 is more than what that is. So if you were giving your daughter a gift of $30,000 or $30,000 in value of the house, then you would have to file a gift tax return to report the gift of the additional $14,000. And that gift tax, that $14,000 would reduce your unified credit that you have for later on. If she's been renting the house and you've been collecting rent and reporting it as a rental and you gift her the house or a portion of the house, it would change that part of the reporting on your tax return. But gifting the house does not create a tax for you. When you gift it, you would be gifting her your basis. So she steps into kind of your tax situation relative to that property.
Does that answer your question, Janice?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you for calling. And if you've got a question, we have a few open lines, 1-800-642-1234. So give us a call. You can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And we do have an email from Andy. He inherited some family land in Wisconsin and paid a tax bill for it. Is there anywhere to deduct that tax if you do not itemize? He is currently paying property taxes on his house and can only take the $300 standard state deduction?
The answer to Andy's question is pretty simple. If you don't itemize for federal purposes, there is no place to do anything else with property taxes. If it is land that is unimproved land, there is a code section that does allow you to make an election to add the taxes or carrying costs, they say, to the basis of the land, but it has to be unimproved land. That's the only thing that I can think of that would allow you to do anything with those property taxes if you don't itemize.
Okay. And John in Madison, let's go to your question.
Yeah, hi, Mary. I'm recently retired, and I've got a 401k that's still in my company plan, and I'd like to roll it over into an IRA, and I'm considering a Roth IRA. What can I expect to pay for taxes if I convert that into a Roth IRA? What I'd be paying this or 2021 for taxes?
All, if you convert the entire 401k to a Roth IRA, then you would be including all of that amount at the time of conversion in your income.
Okay.
So you need to see how large it is and then what the tax implications of that much income in 1 year on your tax return is.
Thank you, John. Next up is Lily in Lake Begemann. Hi, Lily.
Hi, good afternoon.
What's your question?
My question is, I formed a business in the end of 2021, but I didn't actually perform any services. But I did take deposits for services to be provided in 2022. So I did take in money, haven't performed the services, and I'm just wondering if I need to do anything with my taxes for 2021 for the business.
What kind of business is it, Lily?
It's a mobile bartending service.
What type of entity did you create?
An LLC.
A single member LLC or a multi-member LLC?
Single member.
Okay. So that is a Schedule C on your tax return. And if you did collect money that you have a right to use it as you wish, it still would be taxable in this year.
Great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And Kevin in Ashland, what can we help you with?
Good morning. So my wife and I are on permanent pay with the IRS because she's self-employed. We've never been able to work it into our budget to do those quarterly payments. So for a couple of years now, we've had a tax bill. And then, of course, last year we had another tax bill. But I have not received any communication regarding any of this from the IRS in over a year. Do you know if that just, like, automatically gets updated, and if we're already paying $150 a month, do they just add that on to the payment plan, or can we expect to have a big bill coming our way because we haven't heard anything from them, if that makes sense?
If you have an installment agreement, which is what you're talking about, that you set up an installment agreement with the IRS, generally, that installment agreement covers the year that you set it up for that tax bill. The IRS does allow people to restructure that bill and may add other years onto it. But with an installment agreement, when they grant an installment agreement, generally it's granted with the idea that you are going to be up to date on your current year taxes. So having an ongoing revolving charge account with the IRS is not in their normal course of business. So I would expect that someday when all of this gets caught up, you're going to get a big bill.
Okay.
I would recommend that you contact the IRS. You'll have to be patient and wait on hold probably, but you need to work it out with them.
It's really important for him to be proactive, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Kevin. We've got an email from Marion Mountain. She wants to know how you determine how much should be withheld from a pension payment. She was told that it's different than a typical deduction. It's her only income, and it's $1,017 a month. She can't find information to tell her what should be withheld.
Well, first of all, I believe this year the IRS, let me back up for just a minute. Withholding statements usually require a W-4, and we usually do those for wages. The IRS has a corresponding W-4P that determines how much or allows the issuer of the pension to know what to withhold. The W-4 itself was changed, I believe 2020 might have been the first year that we had the new W-4. And it is sufficiently different from the old W-4 where people would say single and zero or married and two or something like that. It has a different process. I believe that this year the W-4P was recreated in that image. And so basically what the idea of the new W-4 and the W-4P under that realm is that if that's your only or main source of income, if you check your filing status and sign the return, sign the W-4 and submit it, that they will withhold based on the chart what that situation is. if the employer or the issuer of the 1099 doesn't do it that way, you need to determine how much you need to pay the tax bill from that source. And some of the people will allow you to do it on a percentage basis and say withhold 12% or withhold 15%. So that's the best advice I can give you without knowing more of the situation.
Okay. Thanks for that email, Mary. And let's go to Mike in Wanakee. Hi, Mike.
Hi, I am an independent contractor, and I'm guessing I'm going to make about $12,000 this year, and it looks like that's under the amount that I need to make to prepay my quarterly taxes. Is that correct?
There is nothing that I know of that says there's an amount that you need to prepay the quarterly taxes. Here's what I think you're telling me, that I'm under the filing requirement, and therefore I don't owe any tax. Is that what you're kind of saying?
I think so. I printed out all the forms and did the math, and that's what it looked like to me.
Okay. One thing that you're forgetting in this picture is that $12,550 is the standard deduction for a single individual for 2021. That number increases with inflation, obviously, for 2022. But as an independent contractor, you're not only subject to income tax, but you're also subject to self-employment tax. And if $12,000 is your only income, you would not have an income tax issue, but you still have a Social Security tax issue that you are subject to 15.3% Social Security tax. And you would certainly, if you have no other source to pay that in, estimated tax payments would be the way that you pay that. And you are subject to self-employment tax if your self-employment tax earnings are over roughly $400.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mike. And let's go to, is it Marae in Minocqua?
Yes. Hi.
Hi.
I have a question. My husband always did our taxes jointly, but he passed away this year in January, and I had taxes prepared by AARP. Now, I remember that in the past, he always had estimated tax forms, and I sent in the payments, but that's, I guess, H&R Block, who you used to work with, would give him those things. Now, I did not receive any such thing, and I don't know where should I look for what estimated tax payment I should make, and is there a tax, a form I should look for?
Let me pass on a little bit of advice. First of all, estimated tax forms, 1040 ESs, are available at the IRS website. So you can get them there. But I would strongly suggest that you would seek a professional in this situation to talk to, because if your husband died in January of 2022, you could still file a joint return for 2022, but in 2023, you would be single, and that would change your situation totally. So I think at this point, you need a little bit more advice than just going through AARP.
Okay, thank you, Marae, for that question. Next, Bob in Franklin, you're up. What can we help you with?
Oh, thank you. My mother died last year. She had all of her investments in a trust. There's a lot of money. And that has been split between myself and my brother. But his share is held in the trust for his benefit. How many tax returns do we need to file for 2021?
Okay, that's a really good question, Bob. First of all, if your mother died in 2021 and she has investments, in all probability, she's required to file a final personal income tax return. The trust could either be a revocable trust or an irrevocable trust. Do you know if the trust became irrevocable at her date of death, or did this trust exist as an irrevocable trust before that time?
It's a revocable trust.
Okay. So if you have set up, it's another term might be a living trust, but when your mother died, this trust became an irrevocable trust. And therefore, there is a trust return that would be required to be filed. A trust return has a calendar year end date. And so from the date of death till the end of the year, there is a trust return that would report the income at that point in time. If that was set up totally that everything she had went into the trust, there would be two returns to file for this year, one for her and one for the trust. Now, if the trust was not set up in a way to include all of her income, there is a possibility that there would be an estate return as well as a trust return to the estate return to catch the extras. And depending on the wording of the trust, how it is, you know, how it's set up, it could be that you need three returns. Again, it's something that you should take the trust document to a professional, have them take a look at it and help you decide exactly how many returns for 2021 would need to be filed.
Okay, thanks for that question, Bob. And speaking of professionals, we had an email from Jim in Monona wondering, how do you become an enrolled agent?
Nice question, Jim. An enrolled agent is a person who is a tax professional that is eligible to work with the IRS to represent people. It is a three-part exam that you study for and pass the three parts. And so if you go to the National Association of Enrolled Agents, it's a website and there's a lot of information there. Or if you go to irs.gov and you type in enrolled agents, you will also find information there about the testing and the cost of the testing and maintaining your standards and things like that.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for that question. And Mary, thank you again so much for helping us out this year. And I'm sure we'll pick up again in the fall.
All right.
We've been talking with Mary Mellum. She and her husband, David, operate Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals and are enrolled agents. Join us again tomorrow when PJ Leash will be with us to talk about insects, including spongy moss and those strange spiders. I'm Jill Nadeau, in for Larry Mueller. Thanks for listening.